Calling the State Affairs Committee to order at 3:17 p.m. February 27th in the Max Gruenberg Room. Will the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Tuck?
Here.
Representative Josephson, alternate. Representative Knott?
Here.
Representative Wolf? Representative Tuck, alternate. Mm-hmm. Representative Ledoux?
Here.
Representative Birch? Representative Johnson? Chair Price Tompkins?
Here, and with four members present, we have a quorum to conduct business. And Representative Birch is walking through the door right now, so we're actually at five members. We have a nice agenda today, so we'll see what we can get through. First on the agenda is a confirmation hearing for Commissioner Valerie Davidson, followed by a first hearing for HCR 22 from Representative Millett, a first hearing for HJR 38, relating to Alaska Railroad Transfer Act and conveyances from Representative Kopp, and then public testimony for HB 184 from Representative Josephson, and time allowing public testimony on HJR 1 also from Representative Josephson. And a couple of administrative notes. I will be gone on Thursday, and the vice chair will chair that meeting on Thursday, so that will continue as scheduled. And I also want to note for the committee's reference that there is being distributed an act relating to the collection of fees by the Department of Public Safety for fire and explosion prevention and safety services, which has been noticed for this Thursday, pending introduction and referral, and the piece of legislation that's been distributed to members, which will likely be read across tomorrow, is such legislation. First item on today's agenda, confirmation hearing for Commissioner Valerie Davidson as successor to the Lieutenant Governor. Commissioner Davidson, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and if you wouldn't mind, share a little bit about the benefit of the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Valerie Davidson, and I currently serve as the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. And it really is my honor to be asked by Governor Walker to serve as Lieutenant Governor successor.
Any questions from the committee?
If I may, Mr. Chair, can I just maybe inform not only the committee but also members of the public and members of the staff of the Department of Health and Social Services? There was a lot of concern when the successor was named, when it was read across the floor in both the House and Senate, and folks said, oh my gosh, is Lieutenant Governor leaving? Is something happening? Is he in poor health? Are you leaving us as commissioner? The answer to all of those questions is no. What the Lieutenant Governor's successor position is in the event that something happens, and we all hope that doesn't happen, it's just good practice to ensure that a third person is named to be able to step up into that role in case the Lieutenant Governor is unable to serve.
Representative Johnson.
Well, I don't really have a question, and I wouldn't want to not allow people to hear more about you by just, but I'm just delighted that you're in the position you're in, and I think it's a great thing. I mean, I'm quite pleased to have you here, but also that it's not just an honor. It is an honor, but it's not just that. I mean, it's a matter of the fact that you are, you know, are prepared to step into that position, and no one ever feels comfortable, and no one ever feels prepared for anything. If that kind of tragedy took place, but have you done anything in addition to what you normally do to when you think about that possibility or?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, yes. So just in terms of preparation for the position that I'm in now, I really have spent a lifetime in public service and have spent the last 18 years either working for a tribal organization in healthcare. I started at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation and then later was at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium until my appointment to the position of Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. I've spent some time with staff from the Lieutenant Governor's office getting a sense of what his responsibilities are to ensure that should that happen, and we all hope that it doesn't. I personally love working with Lieutenant Governor Mallott, but we always hope for the best and plan for the worst, recognizing that the state needs to be prepared to be able to move forward. The good news is that the Lieutenant Governor's office has a really solid team. They're really a great team. And the Department of Health and Social Services also has a solid leadership team. That both of the deputy commissioners have been in their positions for one for 25 years and one for actually 30 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hi, Val. I won't try to say your Yupik name, but so we had a we had a bill in front of us not too long ago that dealt with succession, and there was a lot of questions unanswered. So it's kind of good timing that this is coming up. Not really, but and I don't know if you being here today is going to answer any of our questions. But you know, it was in case of emergency, if something happened to the governor, if he was out of touch, if he's on an airplane to China, and something there was an emergency. You know, who are you going to call? And Lieutenant Governor came up, and I guess if he was detained, then we'd be calling you. Is that fair to say?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, yes, and that's all as prescribed under the Alaska Constitution.
Okay. Well, I guess it's good to have your number. Thanks.
Representative Knott.
Thank you. And I, too, am glad to see you here, Valerie, and glad to support you in this position. But just question I have, does this now prevent you from traveling with the governor and lieutenant governor at the same time?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, yes. We would definitely ensure that we were not all on the same plane. When I was originally asked, I will confess that one of the questions when I was asked by the governor and lieutenant governor, well, what do you think? I said, well, of course, I'm happy to step up and serve, but I will tell you on a personal note that my family and I pray for the two of you every day, and we will step up our efforts.
Good. Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
You may have mentioned this before, but who was the successor before?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, or rather Vice Chair Ledoux, the successor was Craig Fleener, who is now living in Washington, D.C. He's still in the governor's office, still doing Arctic policy, but is located in D.C. And the governor and lieutenant governor thought it would be more appropriate to have somebody who is living in the state ready to step into that position.
Thank you.
At this time, we have public testimony, and an explosion of public testimony. Open now. Online in Bethel, Anna Hoffman. Ms. Hoffman, please put yourself on the record and present your testimony.
Hello, my name is Anna Hoffman. I work as the President and CEO of Bethel Native Corporation and serve as the co-chair of the Alaska Federation of Natives. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. On behalf of AFN, I endorse the confirmation of Valerie Davidson. The knowledge, training, character, and integrity she holds makes Valerie the smartest choice. She has done excellent work within the Department of Health and Social Services, including the implementation of Medicaid expansion and the OCS state and tribal compacting. She is a critical member of this administration. She is thoughtful, sensible, and sincere. Her work before becoming a commissioner, coupled with her legal background and her connection to the land and Alaska's people, make Valerie the most qualified amongst the cabinet to hold this position. Makan mam tre somakwat nakan rayuhto. Jingu maka Okhagalok, Iqaluit, Alaska, New England. Calling in from her hometown in Bethel, Alaska, I wholeheartedly support the appointment of Valerie Davidson, as she will execute her responsibilities on behalf of all Alaskans. Brianna.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffman. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, next on line, Myra Munson. Ms. Munson, please put yourself on the record and present your testimony.
I'm Myra Munson. I'm a counsel for the law firm of Sinowski, Kennedy, Sasser, Miller, and Munson, and a former commissioner of the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, and a lifelong Alaskan. I, too, strongly endorse the appointment of the confirmation of Ms. Davidson as successor to the lieutenant governor, should that ever need to occur. So she is, I've known her since she was a clerk in our law offices throughout her professional career since she became a lawyer, and she is both extremely capable in the field in which she specifically works, but also knowledgeable about every aspect of the state, and just really a terrific choice for all of the people of Alaska. You could hardly do better. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Munson. Any questions? Seeing none. Next, we'll take testimony from the room. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on the confirmation? Uh-oh, Val, you might have to, you're going to get bumper card out of that seat. We have testimony in the room.
So tricky.
Good afternoon. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Liz Medicine Crow. I'm Klinken and Hayden from Cake, Alaska, and I'm very honored to be here to speak on behalf of Valerie Davidson's confirmation. Surprise. She was not expecting this. And I am here to speak in the capacity as a friend. I work as the president and CEO of First Alaskans Institute, where she serves as one of our trustees. And I know that there have been prior comments about her professional capacity in regards to stepping up to this position. I wanted to speak about who she is as a person. There could be no one better to fill in the shoes of the governor and lieutenant governor should something happen. In our native way, to speak about something happening in a bad way to someone would make it come closer to you, so I want to be very careful about not doing that. In the words of Val herself, hope for the best, prepare for the worst. And I really think that in the case of Commissioner Davidson stepping up into this role and serving on behalf of Alaska in this capacity, for myself, there's no one else I would go to for that type of leadership or that kind of care. In fact, as her friend, I have often told people that in case of an apocalypse, in case of the worst happening here in Alaska, you will find me running to her house because she is the most prepared person, and she is ready for any disaster that may come our way. She's prepared her household to be fit. She's prepared her children and her mother who live with her to be fit and to know what to do in an emergency. That's the kind of leadership we need in somebody who is stepping into this role. And in terms of her capacity to lead, what I know about her is that she has children at the center of her core, so she will always take care of them. She has elders as a fiber of her being, so she will take care of them. And she has every other person in Alaska has their best interest at heart. So in the event that she were to be called upon to make some very difficult decisions and to step up in a time of emergency for the state, there's nobody better who could do that and provide that leadership. So Ganesh Chish Hawa, thank you so much for asking me to testify and fully support her confirmation in this role.
Thank you, Ms. Medicine Crow. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the room to testify? And looking online, I see one last testifier, Tilly Davidson. If you can hear us, please put yourself on the record and present your testimony.
Oh, my name is Tilly Davidson. I'm Valerie's mother. I'm calling to let you know I fully support her appointment and that we're backing her up as a family so she wouldn't have to feel alone right now. I love you, Nuchi.
Thank you, Ms. Davidson. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, please go ahead. Any further comments?
Love you.
Through the chair, if I may. I love you too, girls. I love you too, Mom. Okay, you can put your phone on mute, ladies. So I have to say, I apologize for my awkward start. Yupix, we have this wonderful tradition and a wonderful philosophy that your experiences really define your view of the world. And every experience that you have really shapes your worldview. And a part of that is also the responsibility of taking that knowledge to make sure that you can improve the lives of everyone around you. But that also comes with a responsibility that we're not supposed to hold ourselves up higher than another person. That's just extremely bad luck. I will, however, refer you to my resume so that I don't have to. We always say you define a person by what they have done and not by what they say that they have done. Who that person is really defined by what they've done in their lives and what other folks recognize. And so I apologize that I didn't come up here in the way that I probably you were expecting it to tell you about why I'm so qualified for this position. But I also hope that that my record speaks for itself. One of the things that I pride myself on is that that this is not the first time our state has had to make really difficult decisions. And I must say that I don't envy any of you and the roles that you are in the time that our state is facing a significant budget deficit. But I also know that this is not the first time our state has been in a challenging position. And what I have seen in my 50 years of life in Alaska and building upon thousands of years of history in my family, that when Alaskans come together and have those really difficult conversations and honest conversations, we always arrive at the right decisions. Maybe not everybody's completely happy with that decision, but at the end of the day, we arrive at a really good place. I also know that I have learned time and time again in my work that people will do the most amazing things under the most impossible conditions as long as we have the right reasons. And what I have learned is that children and family are always the right reasons. And so I thank you for all of the work that you do every day. I think sometimes folks back home don't realize how long your days are, how early you start, and how late you end, because we're all really trying to make the very best decisions that we possibly can for Alaska. And with that, I really appreciate the committee's time today. I saw your big stack of work that you still have to do. So with that, I won't provide any other comments, but I appreciate your consideration today.
Thank you. Madam Vice Chair?
Yes, I move that Valerie Davidson's name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration.
Seeing and hearing no objection. Motion carries and the paperwork will circulate as we move forward. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Brianna.
This takes us to the second item on today's agenda, HCR 22, relating to Sexual Assault Awareness Month from Representative Millett, and will be presented today by Hans Rodvik in her office. The amendment deadline on this resolution, which is also scheduled for Thursday, is going to be 10 a.m. Thursday morning, and public testimony will also be taken on Thursday, but today for presentation of the legislation. Mr. Rodvik, please put yourself on the record and present the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Hans Rodvik, staff to Representative Millett. She apologizes she couldn't be here. She's on her way back to Anchorage to join her daughter, who just had her third boy. So exciting news today. On that note, thank you for the opportunity to present HCR 22, which is proclaiming April of 2018 Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Pretty straightforward resolution today. It's no surprise that our state has some work to do in preventing violence. Sexual assault, our rates are some of the worst in the nation, and those rates are cited in the resolution. Unfortunately, sexual violence affects Alaskans with no regard to race, socioeconomics, region, or gender. It's felt throughout our entire state. It's a little easy to feel demoralized by the statistics we read and the presentations we hear. But we need this resolution and the situation we find ourselves in as a point for change. We have some great resources throughout our state working on this issue and dedicated to preventing sexual assault and violence from the top down. We have the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, who you should all have a letter of support from in support of this resolution. We have there's other organizations such as Standing Together Against Rape, AWARE, located here in Juneau, AWAKE throughout Alaska, the Tundra Women's Coalition in Bethel, the Green Dot Alaska, Girls on the Run, Coaching Boys into Men, and other violence prevention projects in Anchorage, Sitka, Ketchikan, Juneau, and Homer. We have some change makers who are old and young taking our rate of serious sexual violence to task. Thankfully, we've seen in some of the studies that should be in your bill packet today that rates are on the decline. However, there is certainly more work to do, as this is something that we should never tolerate. So why does this need a resolution every year? Well, it's because it's an important conversation, and it's something that no matter that we should be focused on and tackling. We have an opportunity to join and support survivors and prevent future violence. I'm here to answer any questions if there might be any.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rodvik. Any questions from the committee on HCR 22? Seeing none, thank you very much for the presentation. And this bill will come back before the committee for any possible amendments, public testimony, and potential action. Thank you very much. This takes us to the third item on today's agenda, and that is HJR 38 from Representative Kopp, this being a first hearing. Representative Kopp and staff, Mr. Cordero, please make yourselves at home, put yourselves on the record, and present the legislation. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chuck Kopp, State House Representative for District 24, and I have with me my lead staff, Eric Cordero-Giorgana.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eric Cordero-Giorgana, and we're just waiting for the monitor to start working. There it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is a privilege to bring this issue before the committee. Mr. Chairman, some of you may be aware I've been working on this with a number of Alaskan citizens that come south of the Denali Borough all the way down through the Mat-Su Valley into the Palmer and then down into Anchorage area and then down the track all the way to Seward. This impacts literally thousands of Alaskans. We have up here the great quote from John Locke to begin with, that government has no other end but the preservation of property. We know that all our freedoms, whether they be in the preservation of our own body or the fruits of our labor or property, if the government can't help protect that, then really it has no other purpose it can do for us. So next slide. The harm that we are addressing is that there was an interest, a property interest that was taken from landowners along the railroad right-of-way in a way that circumvents the Constitution and due process and the rule of law. Hundreds of landowners along the right-of-way that the railroad currently has now have a cloud put on their title due to an unlawful exclusive use easement claim to the entire right-of-way. This exclusive use easement claim does not exist for any other railroad in America. Congress said, beginning in 1875, they said, no more are we going to grant general land-grant railroads. They did that to incentivize the Union Pacific East-West route. They gave them the land. That didn't work out. It ended up with a lot of corruption that divided huge tracts of land, industry, farming, because that they couldn't cross the railroad, the rail belt without tariffs and huge fees, and a lot of corruption happened. So Congress said no more. From here on out, beginning in 1875, all railroads have a surface easement only. So that's the first issue of the harm. The second issue is that the railroad acted in violation of Alaska Statute 4240-285 in 2005 and 2006 when they went to the Bureau of Land Management in the Department of Interior without telling the legislature or the governor or any of the affected landowners along the right-of-way, and they got an exclusive use easement patent on all the property, on homestead properties along the right-of-way. Now, the reason why I say homestead properties is because, if you remember, the Alaska Railroad was formed by an act of Congress in 1914. Between 1914 and 1982, there were hundreds of homestead patents issued by the federal government to private landowners along the right-of-way, where the federal government completely divested themselves of all ownership in that land, and that land went into private hands. And the only thing the federal government reserved for itself was a right-of-way, a surface easement for rail, telegraph, and telephone, which was consistent with every other easement in every other railroad in America post-1875. Now, what is this easement? Next slide. A 200-foot easement that goes 100 feet either side of the track, and that is a limited surface easement. The General Railroad Act of America says that's all railroads get from now on. And I refer to you to this document in your packup. It's the overview and backdrop, which explains to you historically what happened here. And today, this limited interest right-of-way provides the foundation for 80% of all the track mileage in the nation, this surface easement. So using principles in the 1875 Act, the Alaska Railroad Act authorized the creation of our Alaska Railroad. Now, in 1982 was the first time it really became an issue of what does this easement mean? How exclusive is it? Does the railroad actually have a fee simple interest in the land? And the Interior Board of Land Appeals ruled on this because the state, under its statehood selections, selected right-of-way land as part of the statehood compact. The railroad said, no, you cannot select that. We own the land. And the Interior Board of Land Appeals said, no, you do not own the land. You have a surface easement only, and the state may select those lands under the Statehood Act. And they relied on a Supreme Court case in 1942, Great Northern Railway, where the court said that the only easement a railroad has is a surface easement. They do not have fee ownership of the land. In other words, they do not have any outright ownership of the land. This was again confirmed by our Supreme Court in 2014. Now, you will be surprised if I just may read to you what the court said in the most recent Supreme Court case in Marvin Brent. And you have this in your file. It's in your support documents. What the court held in this case was that the right-of-way, railroad right-of-way, is an easement that is terminated by the railroad's abandonment, leaving the property owner's land unburdened. They went on to say that the 1875 Act, upon which they base their decision, clearly states the railroads only have this easement. and it grants nothing more than an easement. This court has adopted the government's previous argument in full, that the only thing a railroad has is a surface easement. Finally, the court says, we find the 1875 Railroad Act's text is wholly inconsistent with the grant of a fee interest. A fee interest is when you own the land outright. The court has said, railroads, you don't have a fee interest. You do not own the land. You have a surface easement only. This opinion came down March 10th, 2014. Less than 1 month later, the Alaska Railroad authored a 10-page legal response to a constituent in Anchorage about concerns of the railroad's fee interest claim in the right-of-way, as well as exclusive use easement, allowing them to fence off all adjoining property owners on homestead patent lands. The railroad said, we have previously addressed your concerns and drafted a comprehensive memorandum addressing those issues and have explained that the Alaska Railroad holds fee simple interest in most of the Alaska Railroad right-of-way and at least an exclusive use easement in all of it. That is outrageous. That is directly in violation of what we just read. The Supreme Court says you do not have a grant of fee interest in railroads anymore. No railroad does. And they double down on it. In 2017, our Alaska Supreme Court, in the Godspeed case, says that a surface easement must allow the user of that easement, the holder of the easement, all necessary control to safely conduct whatever operations they need to do. But they may not deny the landowner proper use of the easement if it doesn't interfere with whoever holds the easement. Now, that wasn't a railroad case, but it was an easement case. And the principle is the same, and it continues through the law. No credible argument can be made that an exclusive use easement belongs to the Alaska Railroad without establishing what the private parties owned when the federal government actually made the transfer to the state of Alaska. Now, you may ask yourself, why is this such a big deal with the exclusive use easement? The exclusive use easement allows the railroad to fence off and exclude any adjoining landowner for any purpose whatsoever. What that effectively does is it can take properties that have been built next to the right-of-way, many of them 40, 50 years ago, coming off original homestead patents, and all of a sudden the railroad can say, we are building a fence through your backyard. Many properties have immaculately maintained yards and lawns along the railroad right-of-way that now homeowners can be effectively cut off from even accessing their backyard to pick up their boat or trailer or anything, because they've always enjoyed a shared use, a common use of the right-of-way, as long as it didn't interfere with rail operations. Now, what the railroad will tell you is that in the name of safety, they need to be able to exercise this function. But in fact, the safety problems have almost always occurred on public crossings and in areas of public land use. The private property owners are some of the very best caretakers of the right-of-way and the first to report to railroad when there is a problem, because it's their property, it's their land, and they want to make sure it's taken care of. Now, interestingly, I would say the railroad has not always maintained that they have this right. Their lead counsel on June 25, 1996, Ms. Phyllis Johnson, argued before the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee that the federal government owns less than what they actually thought they did. And she said in that report that it needed to be researched on a parcel-by-parcel basis whether or not we, the railroad, actually have all the rights we think we had from the transfer, because other people were there first, because the right-of-way went across private property. It was not on federal land. Now, what I would say is that nobody is arguing the railroad in some places does have an exclusive use easement. The Alaska Railroad Transfer Act said that they do in the Denali Park Borough. That was federal land, and the federal government owned it, so they could transfer it to the state. They also owned federal land where there was competing native land claims, also up north. And wherever the federal government actually owned the land, they could transfer an exclusive use easement because they actually had it to give. And here's the thing to focus on. The federal government cannot transfer anything to the state that it doesn't actually own. Does that make sense? You can't give away something you actually own. Otherwise, you have an undocumented owner. Someone takes your car because, whoa, there was somebody else's name on the title. He didn't know about it. I mean, that is what we're looking at here, is what did the federal government actually own at the time of the transfer, and what could they actually send to the state? Next slide. The resolution itself speaks to the Alaska Railroad being created under the Alaska Railroad Act, which directly granted interests in federal land for railroad rights-of-way for the construction of the standard easement at the time, railroads, telegraph, and telephone lines. Railroad rights-of-way only had easements for railroads, telegraph, and telephone lines since 1875. That has been the only easement Congress has authored. Next slide. Before and after completion of the railroad, the government conveyed into private ownership land affected and burdened by the right-of-way. This is the homestead patents. Did you know that approximately 60% of the 500 miles of track are homestead patents? Huge amounts of land in the municipalities, in Palmer, Anchorage, the Denali area, Cantwell, down the track towards Seward, huge amounts were already in private hands. So homeowners, homestead patent owners, had a railroad track reserved across their property before this Alaska Railroad was transferred from federal ownership to the state in 1983. Next slide. So the state acquires the railroad from the federal government in 83 and creates the corporation to oversee the operation as the instrumentality of the state. The Alaska Railroad Transfer Act provided for the transfer from the federal government of all rail properties of the railroad to the state. Now, what does that mean? They said that this means rail properties of the Alaska Railroad, meaning all right, title, and interest of the United States in those properties. In other words, the only thing that was transferred is an interest the federal government actually owned. They could not transfer an interest they did not own at the time. On January 14, 1983, the railroad reserved and owned right-of-way interests on private properties, that's homestead properties, that were provided for in patents and other conveyance documents. That was their rail, telegraph, and telephone right-of-way. So if all right, title, and interest of the United States in the rights-of-way did not include, and we are arguing it did not, at a minimum, an exclusive use easement, as defined in ARTA, the Alaska Railroad Transfer Act 12026, the easement could not have been included in the transfer under the plain language of the Alaska Railroad Transfer Act. Now, here I would pause and tell you that there are two places in the Alaska Railroad Transfer Act where the exclusive use easement is mentioned, and that has to do with competing land claims among Alaska Native corporations and village corporations and in the Denali Borough. That is where the government did, in fact, have an exclusive use easement that they could pass on to the state. They never had it. They never argued they had it. They never even hinted that they had an exclusive use across all the homestead patent properties. And it's interesting that in December of 2015, our own congressman, Don Young, to a large delegation of my constituents, said that Alaska Railroad Transfer Act of 1982 would have never passed Congress had vested property rights been contemplated to be actually changed by the transfer. In other words, property rights you already had, there was never an intent to change those vested property rights. That would be an unconstitutional taking. Next slide. So during the transfer of these rail properties under the Act, yes, the U.S. Department of the Interior erroneously issued, and the Alaska Corporation accepted, an interim conveyance of interests in real property not owned by the federal government, including exclusive use easements. Now, this interim transfer speaks to how the whole process happened. First, we had a license issued by the federal government for the Alaska Railroad. They had to have a license to operate. Secondly, there was an interim conveyance. The interim conveyance means just that. It's conditional. It's temporary. It's things have to be worked out. The interim conveyance realized that there were a tremendous number of parcels of property that needed to be researched to find out what interest did the federal government actually have to pass along to the state. The federal government did not know everything it owned, everything it had. Over 500 miles of track needed to be researched to say what interests does the state railroad now have, and that had to be researched. So this was considered an interim conveyance. It did not go final until 2005 and 2006. And there was something that happened before 2005 and 2006. The Alaska legislature started to get nervous. We had people screaming from Whittier. We had people screaming from Palmer, from Anchorage, from all around the state saying, hey, the railroad is incrementally ratcheting down on the right-of-way and fencing off adjoining landowners where for decades that has never been an issue. What's going on? The legislature said, okay, under AS 4240-285, you have to come to us for legislative approval before you can accept any more conveyances of land, land grants, titles, interest, anything, because frankly, we're tired of it. And the city of Whittier really was the final straw when they started complaining about how they were being literally run out of town by this assumption of exclusive use. So, we listed as an exception saying as long as the only thing you're asking for is consistent with all right title and interest that the government had to give, you don't have to come to us for that. But what we are saying is that an exclusive use easement was not something the federal government had to give across private homestead patent properties. And we specifically said in 4240-285, if you're asking for this in a municipality. And that happens to be where most of the homesteads were. That's why it affects the entire city of Anchorage, all the way up through Palmer in the Valley area. And the railroad in 2005 and 2006 went to the Bureau of Land Management, Department of Interior, received patents of exclusive use easement. They say they were only getting what they were promised in 1985. They were never promised that to the entire right-of-way. That would be an outrageous, unconstitutional theft of property rights without due process of law, with no landowners being affected, and the railroad knew it. They knew people would be up in arms if they knew this was going on. That all happened without any word until they started rolling out this residential right-of-way use permit program to monetize the railroad. Now, to the railroad's credit, they stopped doing that. They backed down from that, and I do appreciate that. And I do not lay all the blame at the railroad's feet. The Department of Interior improperly allowed this to happen when they gave the railroad these 2005-2006 patents of exclusive use easement across hundreds of miles of private property. It's really unconscionable what happened, that type of a property interest was essentially the same thing as a fee interest. That's outright ownership. In our Supreme Court, Our nation's Supreme Court has said no railroad has that anymore. It's against the law. You cannot have it. And every time in the case law where that's been asserted, the Supreme Court has struck them down. So don't come back here. Don't talk to us about this again. You don't have a fee interest in the land. In fact, in that same case I just read you, the Supreme Court commented on other cases they ruled on, and they highlighted Stellar v. Oregon and Great Northern Colorado versus Steinke, and they said the dispute in each of these other cases dealing with competing land claims to acquire and develop tracts of land, in the extent that any of these cases could possibly be read to imply that the interest was something more than a surface easement, any such implication would not have survived this court's unequivocal statement to the contrary. They said it as strongly as they could say it. And so the whole resolution is to give the Alaska legislature the opportunity to comment on what we believe is clearly the law, and that if there was a misapplication, and we strongly believe there was, in the Alaska Railroad Transfer Act of an exclusive use easement, and you saw the letter from the attorney, they think it's more than exclusive use. They think they own the right-of-way, have a fee interest in the entire rail bed, which they do not. Our Supreme Court says you cannot unless they are so special that they fall out of all bounds of what the law is on railroads, and I do not believe they do. This resolution says we as the legislature believe certain things, and it affects many hundreds, some say thousands of property owners, and that we are asking our state to disclaim any property interests that have been taken contrary to law, and that we ask our congressional delegation to work with us in righting this egregious wrong.
And Representative Kopp, I wonder if that might be a good jumping off point for any questions from the committee.
Sure.
Representative Ledoux.
Why isn't this in court? I mean, you've given some really impassioned legal arguments. So has anybody made these legal arguments to a court?
So that's a great question, Representative Ledoux. And you will hear from some of the state's preeminent property law attorneys on Thursday, which we'll be able to get into that. And then you'll realize just how much weight there is behind it, this resolution that we're bringing. But the reason is in the Alaska Railroad Transfer Act, we made it so the U.S. Solicitor General is bound to defend any claim on the right-of-way forever. So somebody has to sue the federal government and take them on in court to do this. And any individual landowner, unless they are a John Sturgeon five times more wealthy, and we know how much difficulty he's been through fighting his battles, it is almost impossible. A resolution is an ability of the state of Alaska to speak strongly. It is a very strong view that we feel an egregious wrong was done to landowners, that there was a problem both on the Department of Interior's end, and by the way, our new Assistant Secretary Joe Balash is all over this. He is working to help unwind this, and I'm very confident that we are going to get some cooperation on them. But also, it's the state's duty to disclaim and walk away from stolen property. We don't want to stand by quietly abating and abetting the taking of property that is not ours. We ought to drop that like a hot potato. That's theft by receiving in the law. And that is why this is so important. So an individual landowner, just the cost is prohibitive to take this on. They do need help. I would love for a large public interest law firm to take this on. But there is a lot our legislative body can do. And it does involve standing up to a little bit of conflict, a little bit of heat. But our body has done that many times. And this is a statement we can make to help hundreds of Alaskans have their rights restored to them.
Follow up.
So maybe I need to ask the preeminent property lawyers, but I guess I'm wondering whether or not this would be considered a public interest lawsuit. And if it is a public interest lawsuit, then normally those are taken and there are pretty generous attorney's fees when you win them.
I can tell you that many people have tried to get the attention of public interest law firms, and it's an ongoing effort to pursue that. It is still ongoing, but ideally, but the world we live in is taking action that we can rather than waiting for something to happen. And because you have to take on and sue the federal government in this case, this is something the state can do to make it very clear that we do not support any interest that the federal government never had to begin with. And I do want to emphasize is this resolution does not say the railroad does not have a right-of-way. This resolution does not say the railroad doesn't have the right to safely conduct a right-of-way. Remember, the railroad has police officers. They can issue citations for trespassing. They have full legal authority to protect the right-of-way. So they have that authority now. They don't need an exclusive use to make a safe right-of-way. There is it is a claim that is not supportable in the law, and it is contrary to the interests of every landowner along the right-of-way.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Knopp, you might just back up and give us a little. Update the members of the committee here in regards to that.
Sure.
Myself specifically. Yes. What was?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Knopp. So, in South Anchorage and in other districts, there have been homes built near the right of way that have been there since the 50s, 60s, and all of a sudden it became clear to many different property owners when the railroad started advancing their residential right of way use permit. And they started getting notices that they would be charged per square foot for their lawn or their gardens. they all of a sudden realized, oh, I thought I was the landowner and the railroad just had a right-of-way. I guess I'm not the landowner. And nobody had an argument about the railroad, you know, stopping anything that would be hazardous to the moving of the train back and forth. But it was, they realized their right-of-way was being monetized. And the homes that had been built in such a way, some of them, like an air park in South Anchorage, Flying Crown, where you have about 40 pilots who have had a right-of-way there that has been, a small portion of it has been a taxiway for an airfield since the 50s. So almost 70 years of continuously being an air park. Well, you might imagine that some of those homes have a hangar big enough for their airplanes to go into. Imagine if all of a sudden you found out that a fence could literally stop you from even driving your airplane out of your garage anymore on an air park that had been in continuous operation for 65-plus years with a shared use of a small portion of that right-of-way. And that Flying Crown Air Park, it's got about a 1,500-foot strip, and the very end of it, at the very end of it, there's a small sliver that it impedes on the right-of-way a little bit, and there's never been a safety issue, no problem with the right-of-way in many decades of flying. But all of a sudden, this entire group of homes was being charged significant fees. To the railroad's credit, they stopped doing that. Can a future board undo that action? Yes. That is why we need to pursue this until we have a final solution, recognizing simply that the federal government could not have passed to the state an interest that it never owned to begin with. And that is what this resolution does.
Follow up.
So do I recall hearing conversations last year where some landowners were being denied access in the manner they were accustomed to and had to reroute? Did we have that conversation?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Knopp. There were landowners that were denied access to the backyards, their property. There were concrete barriers put up by the railroad in Ocean View that all of a sudden people who had literally gone to their backyard to pull their boat out where it was parked for decades couldn't do that anymore. They were cut off. So that was a problem. And I worked with the railroad to try to get them to move some of those barriers, and there were always reasons why they couldn't. But at the end of the day, it was a situation that became untenable. This, your packet has a list of letters from people who are negatively impacted. Many of these are businesses, and there's more letters coming in. The owner of Red Robin in Anchorage, I mean, he had his land trespassed on, trees cut down that were his trees, a fence put up on his property, and the right-of-way was not, the railroad was wrong in where they thought the line was, and he had his beef with the railroad because in plowing his back lot, he would push snow over onto a small section of the right-of-way, and they said, no, you can't do that, and I mean, it's fair enough for them to have a disagreement, but it's not fair enough for them to put a fence up in his yard over it, and to put a fence up without even talking to him. Now, the railroad will tell you they did talk with someone on the premises. It wasn't the landowner. You will hear from Hugh Ashlock, the owner of the Diamond Mall, who has had a very difficult circumstance with the railroad where he would like about another 20 parking spaces, but he won't get those parking spaces unless he's willing to part with a fortune of spaces that impede slightly into a railroad that he has improved that right away. So there are a lot of issues, both business, but all of these are original homestead patent lands. And that's actually in Representative Tuck's district. But it's an issue that runs all the way through the heart of Anchorage and up and down the rail belt. And it comes down to this. Is the railroad right when they say they have a fee interest in the land? And our Supreme Court has said, no, you absolutely do not. Is the railroad right when they say they have an exclusive use easement to the entire right-of-way? They do not have an exclusive use easement across all those homestead patent properties. They do in certain areas where the federal government owned the land to begin with, like in the Denali Park Borough. They do not across most of the track.
Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to extend my thanks and appreciation, Representative Kopp, for bringing this forward. I was pleased to sign on as a co-sponsor. And just in response to some of the inquiries about history, this has been a longstanding concern. It was one I had when I served in municipal government and realized somewhere along the line that it wasn't really able, we were not able to resolve that at the municipal level. I think it does take this body, this organization, bring some resolution and clarity to the property interests there. I think this is a great effort. I think it's been a long time coming, and I think it's one of the challenges that we face here is coming to that balance, and I think this achieves that balance. And I very much appreciate your presentation today and bringing this forward. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Tucker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I also want to thank you for bringing this resolution forward. I can tell you that this is creating miles and miles of borders where people no longer have access to the other side of the rails anymore. And we see that along the coastal trail in Anchorage, where people can walk down that trail, jump over railroad tracks, go down to the shore, go down to the beach, and now we got miles and miles of just being cut off. For what? I mean, it just never made sense to me. And I know that there have been elements and pieces of the arguments have been going back and forth, but I want to thank you for your presentation because it really puts everything in perspective.
Thank you. Thank you, Thank
you. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kopp. So just a couple questions, and you probably went over it, but there was a lot of information there, and it was kind of came at me like a freight train, if you know what I mean.
Freight train.
Sorry, had to throw that out there.
Do we, Representative Wall?
The easement we're talking about, was it 100 feet on either side of the track? And I'm getting a nod of yes. So the right-of-way, or what do you want to call it, the railroad is preventing people from 100 feet from the center line. And I imagine not a whole lot is going on, but as has been testified, fences are going up and blocking people from, if you have property on both sides of the rail line, then you're fenced off from your own property. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, there are many property owners where that would be the case if the railroad assumed the exclusive use easement on their property. Homeowners would be cut off on both sides of their own land, yes.
Okay.
And what to Representative Tuck's point, it's not just people that have property on both sides, it's also people that abut the tracks, and maybe they are cut off from any public access to any other public lands areas because of the fencing, which the argument is always safety, but in the name of safety we can run over hundreds of Alaskans on that argument alone.
Follow up.
So has the fencing been a more recent project where there didn't used to be fencing and now all of a sudden there's fence on either side of track for miles and miles?
So the fencing became very aggressive starting in 2012, and just a few of the problems highlighted on page 4 of this document in your packet, if you look at that third paragraph, it lists about 6 critical situations that have happened just in the municipality of Anchorage. And I'm sorry, Representative Johnson is former mayor of Palmer here. Palmer's had a whole list of grievances, and I lost my list for Palmer. But the fencing, it fenced off access to the Fish Creek Estuary in the Turnagain area, forcing the utility to erect a $114,000 fence near Westchester Lagoon as a precondition to entering and repairing sewer mains. And then talks about installing concrete barricades and steel posts, blocking access to the right-of-way in a residential area in Ocean View, and then the whole right-of-way use permit program. So,
follow up.
Thank you. So, and you said initially a lot of these lands were homesteads, and I mean, do many homesteads still exist, or they've been since subdivided, or what? How, if you know that.
So, through the chair, all the homesteads still exist. All homestead patents are still federal patents. Now, have they been divided up into multiple successors? Yes, but homestead patents don't go away. So like in Ocean View area, in District 24, my area, that's the Spurstad homestead. And there's one other homestead, I forget the name of it now, but all the way up the track, there are large homesteads which are still recognized in title searches, and the individual landowners now subdivided up, but they are considered successors in interest to that homestead, and they actually carry with the land the property interest that came with that homestead patent property.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Knopp.
Representative Knopp, did you notice, sir, how every single member of this committee got the names right? No confusion. That rarely happens.
I my name was not mispronounced, and neither was yours. So that was, yes, through the chair.
Only the best in House State Affairs.
Right, yes, right.
Peak performance. Seeing no further questions or comments, thank you very much, Representative Kopp, for the presentation. This is noticed again, and we will take it up at that time. And I should note that there is an amendment deadline for any proposed amendments on HJR 38, 10 a.m. Thursday. So that's the morning of the next notice presentation on the legislation. Sure. Yeah, Representative Chuck.
Are you going to be taking amendments prior to public testimony, or can we get a chance to hear public testimony before setting an amendment deadline?
My intention is to do it all at once. If there's public testimony that I think is particularly influential, or if the committee finds particularly influential, we can maybe roll with that. Yeah, Representative Wolf.
I have a question for the bill sponsor, not related to amendments, if that's okay.
Go for it, Representative Wolf.
Representative Cop. So just to clarify, we're in talking about railroad land, and there's a lot of discussion about other lands that they own that's not easement or right of way. Say if they own in Fairbanks, they own a bunch of property near the downtown where the station is, and all that. This is separate. This is simply, it's classified as right of way or easement as opposed to just acreage elsewhere. Or maybe you can clarify that.
Yes, through the chair. Yeah, this resolution is not talking about other lands that the railroad owns. This is focused on the right of way and what we view are unconstitutional claims to property interests in the right of way, but not to other lands that the railroad does lawfully possess.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks for the clarification.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. And that,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, no problem. That concludes the third item on today's agenda, which takes us to HB 184. Before we get there, as members know, on Thursday there is an item noticed as an act relating to the collection of fees by the Department of Public Safety for fire and explosion prevention and safety services, pending introduction and referral. That will get read across Wednesday, and this is all related to a broader effort similar to the presentation we had last week from Department of Revenue and Legislative Finance on indirect expenditures, tightening down on indirect expenditures, implementing fees, anything to kind of create a more efficient budget process. And so this is a recommendation that's come out of the budget process and also from the department consistent with this effort. And so at this time, entertain a motion from the vice chair that will enable this legislation to be introduced.
I move that an act relating to the collection of fees by the Department of Public Safety for fire and explosion prevention and safety services be introduced as a State Affairs Committee bill.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Seeing and hearing no objection, it is so moved, and that bill will come before the committee for a first hearing on Thursday. This takes us to HB 184. Representative Josephson. As sponsor, any brief comments before we move to public testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I would rather get right into public testimony. I'll just note very briefly, this bill was heard May the 4th of last year. And for the record, with me is my aide, Megan Holland, who's helped me with this bill, and that the bill was recommended by the Human Rights Commission, and the bill would prohibit discrimination in the public sphere in the area of employment, housing, lending and also discrimination by the government itself. And that's what the bill does.
Thank you. At this time, we'll go to notice public testimony. I'm going to open public testimony at this time. First, and I should note, especially given the number of testifiers in the queue, going to limit, as we do almost always, testimony to 2 minutes per person. Starting with testimony in the room, Allison Curry, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Allison Curry. I'm legislative liaison with Planned Parenthood Votes Northwest in Hawaii and also a Juneau resident. House Bill 184 is common sense legislation that has our full support. Every day, Alaskans across the state live in fear of being fired or denied housing, public service, or other opportunities because they are gay or transgender. Each of us should be free to build loving relationships and create families without discrimination based on our personal private lives. As a healthcare provider and employer, Planned Parenthood knows that this legislation is good for public health and good for business. Because of discrimination and fear of discrimination, many LGBTQ employees hide their identities, are paid less, and have fewer employment opportunities than their non-LGBTQ counterparts. This prejudice puts LGBTQ individuals at increased risk for poor health, both physical and mental. Businesses like Planned Parenthood that support anti-discrimination measures for LGBTQ people recognize that having a corporate culture of inclusivity improves worker productivity and helps recruit the best talent. Sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression have no relationship to workplace performance, and hardworking Alaskans shouldn't be fired because of who they love or who they are. Additionally, no one should be turned away from a business, denied housing, or a public service because of who they are. I am incredibly proud to live in a community that has already embraced equal protection under the law for all people, for my friends, neighbors, and colleagues, and it's time for the state to catch up. Please pass House Bill 184, and thank you for considering these comments.
Thank you, Ms. Curry, for your testimony. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none. Next in the room, Marcia Buck. Ms. Buck, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
My name is Marcia Buck. I live at 8445 Kimberly Street here in Juneau. I'm here as the treasurer of PFLAG Juneau, and I'm to speak in strong support of House Bill 184. As you may know, PFLAG stands for Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. And we also support transgender folks and bisexual, intersex, queer, and questioning folks, although that isn't in our name. But PFLAG, you know. PFLAG and I personally strongly support HB 184 because it's been badly needed here in Alaska for quite a long time. Discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity and gender expression are sadly still alive in our great state, where we often think of ourselves as independent and strong and different than people in the lower 48. But I've noticed in my 50 years here in Alaska that we still manage to discriminate. Two examples come to mind. I will never forget the night my phone rang in the middle of the night, and I answered to find a friend of mine here in Juneau who was sobbing. She's a lesbian, and she lived here in Juneau at the time, and her landlord had just evicted her from her house because she was a lesbian and living peacefully with her partner. When she asked me through tears if the landlord could legally do that, I could only give her a place to stay and a listening ear, but not any legal recourse. When House Bill 184 becomes law, that story will have a different ending. Another conversation I will never forget was with a transgender woman in Anchorage who was told by a city bus driver that she could not board the city bus because of the way she looked. The driver thought she looked too trans. Again, I could not reassure this woman that she had any place to turn legally. when House Bill 184 becomes law, that story will have a different ending too. Please pass House Bill 184 out of committee with your full committee support, because you are Alaskans who care about other Alaskans, and you care about ending discrimination against your constituents. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Buck, for your testimony. Any questions from the committee? And I was just going to say that any written testimony would be very much appreciated. It helps our recording secretary very much. And if Ms. Curry is still in the room, which she is, and you have written testimony, please pass that to the committee aide so we can get that to the recording secretary as well. Next, I'm going to go online, and we have two testifiers that want to get to at the front of the line, so to speak. Marty Busaglia with Alaska State Commission for Human Rights. We have you written for testimony. If you can please put in your name correctly pronounced, because I'm sure I didn't do that, and present your testimony in two or less minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Marty Busaglia. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights. Our mission at the Human Rights Commission is to eliminate and prevent discrimination for all Alaskans. Our vision is an Alaska free of discrimination. How are we going to achieve that if there's a segment of the population that can legally be discriminated against? In November 2016, the Commission passed a resolution calling upon the legislature to act to revise the human rights law, Alaska Statute 1880, to expressly prohibit discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity and expression. That same resolution requested the staff work on drafting proposed regulation language that would adopt the federal interpretation by the EEOC of sex to include sexual orientation and gender identity. The commissioners could not agree on language for this part of the resolution, and some of the commissioners felt strongly that the first part of the resolution, calling on the legislature to act, was the most important part, and that the law should be changed in the legislature. So currently, the second part of the resolution is dead, making it even more critical for the legislature to revise the law. How can we achieve a discrimination-free Alaska if the state allows same-sex couples to be married, but then when they return to work or they are looking for a home, they can be discriminated against? I commend the growing number of representatives who stand behind this bill, and I ask that you get this bill through committee and move it forward so that the vision of a truly discrimination-free Alaska can become reality. And I would like to close with letting you know that there is no fiscal impact to this bill. We expect a minimal increase in complaints as we have compared with EOC and the Anchorage Equal Rights Commission, who both accept these complaints, and their percentages are actually pretty low. Thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you for the testimony. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, moving to our next testifier, if I can find what we have next in line. Caitlin Shortell, if you're online, please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in two or less minutes. Doesn't look as though she is online. So we'll go back into the room, and Lynn Davis with PFLAG, if you're in the room, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and present your testimony in two or less minutes.
Thank you. Lynn Davis, and I live over on Douglas, 25-year Juneau resident. There is an ongoing urgent need to protect us LGBTQ Alaskans, especially transgender Alaskans. They're very vulnerable to violence and vilification. And last year, 33 of us LGBTQ from all over the state testified for Senate Bill 74, Senator Gardner's protection bill. And we all shared stories of discrimination. And then in the summer of 2016, 29 Juneau people testified to the CBJ Assembly about losing jobs, losing housing, losing financing, being kicked out of public accommodations. There's a lot of evidence of how poorly we can be treated here in the state. And now, a year later, all of us testifiers have experienced a dangerous increase in anti-LGBTQ rhetoric. So this is really a perfect time to move this bill forward, and let's showcase Alaskan equality. My wife, family physician, Dr. Mo Longworth, always reminds me that the Alaskan Academy of Family Physicians has always strongly spoken out for statewide protections. Research from their National Academy of Family Physicians shows improved health outcomes for individuals and communities when protections are in place. And studies show there's less violence toward women when LGBTQ people are respected. Fairness in housing, employment, public accommodations, and financial services is basic to surviving in Alaska. My most recent and troubling knowledge of discrimination comes from meeting with transgender high school students. They are under siege for being who they are. Their families and friends worry constantly about their safety. Alaska can send a national message of inclusion and respect by passing HB 184. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much for taking the time to testify today, Ms. Davis. Last in the room, Lynn Kim Lee, excuse me. Please come forward and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Good afternoon. My name, or my preferred name, is Imogene Kimberly Lee. My preferred pronouns are she, her, hers. I very much wish to speak to the passage of HB 184, and I'm going to say the rest. I am not a politician. I lack in tact. I apologize. The United States has had, for the last century, a positive trend regarding civil rights. One no longer sees NINA, no Irish need apply in hiring notices, nor whites-only signs on water fountains, nor are Alaska Native neighbors required to sit in a balcony away from the white folk. This was mostly in my lifetime. Lately, we've foregone the practice of shipping segments of our population to desolate parts of the United States to put them in concentration camps. So we've got a good run going, and I'd like to encourage the continuation of that. 6.5 decades ago, as a child in the Alaska education system, I was taught that one of the basic tenets of American law is that all people are afforded the same protection before the law, that all people are equal. I was taught there is a separation of state and church so that religious teachings of one faith are not imposed upon a person of another faith or a person of no particular faith whatsoever. There is much to do in the press the past few years where conservative members of a given religious leaning are strongly opposed to equal right for persons do not persons who do not conform to the rigid binary division of people as solely male or female. As an aside, I find this strange since the Jewish religion from which their faith springs recognizes 6 genders. Having introduced the term gender, let me clarify. Your gender is your sexual orientation is who you go to bed with. I am transgender. I was born with a male body, and I identify as female. I would suggest that religion has no place in American law. If there is a real problem, you know, like assault weapons being used to slaughter our children, then take appropriate and decisive action. Please do not take action because of the agitation of a relatively small part of one American religious population who selectively pick and choose the parts of the Christian Old Testament that they choose to enforce. I recognize, from a political standpoint at least, the desirability of targeting small demographic groups that are not likely to have the political or economic power to defend themselves rather than larger segments of the population who, figuratively speaking, might blacken your eye. There is less chance of sustaining a pushback to one's peers group if no one knows a person who is part of the target group. I am a trans person. I'm probably the first one you've met. There's only about 6 per thousand, and if we can pass, we do. And so...
And Ms. Lee, just in the interest of making sure that everyone signed up to testify online as well, is able to testify, if you can summarize your comments.
I'm in my last paragraph.
Thank you.
I recognize the right of religion to disprove anything that they wish and enforce those beliefs within their willing congregation. To such groups, judge not, lest you be judged. Love God, love your neighbor. As a transgender woman, I seek two things, nothing more. I seek the same things you expect. You expect to be perceived as a valid being within the community and to be treated with respect. Treat me as a human. Treat me with respect using my preferred pronouns. And allow me, please, to void my bowel and bladder where I choose, comfortably and privately. And yes, there are stalls. And no, I'm not going to see anything inappropriate. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And if you have written testimony, please pass that to the committee aide so it can be recorded for the record. Okay, very well. Last in the room, Barbara Learmonth, if you're here. Please come forward, put yourself on the record, and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Barbara Learmonth. I've lived in Alaska in House District 34 for 40 years, and I'm here in support of HB 184. I represent myself, but I want to point out that I am a Christian, and I say that not because it informs my values, but because I want to correct the common misperception, a very hurtful one, that all Christian churches discriminate against people based on sexual orientation. My Episcopal church does not. I have many years of experience at workplaces that do not discriminate based on sexual orientation. I am not personally discriminated against as a result of that, but when I heard about this hearing, I felt it was really important to come here and speak for my gay coworkers. It's not just that their inclusion in the workplace is not a problem, it's that we would have suffered if they were excluded. The ones that I remember are very competent, and in particular, one person will always stand out as my mind is one of the wisest and most effective senior managers I have ever known. And our agency and our clientele and I personally would have suffered if he had been excluded because of his sexual orientation. And I know he is just one of many such people. There's simply no factual reason to exclude people from our workplaces based on sexual orientation. We live in really challenging times, and we need all the skilled people we can get. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Learmonth, for your testimony. Seeing no questions, we'll now move online, and we'll start in Anchorage LIO, go to the Fairbanks LIO, and conclude with off-net testimony in that order. Moving to Anchorage, Kevin McGee. Mr. McGee, please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes. Can you hear us, Mr. McGee?
Yes. Good afternoon, distinguished members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Kevin McGee, and I'm president of the Anchorage NAACP. As you probably know, the NAACP's mission is to promote equality and equal treatment under the law. In that tradition, I am testifying in support of House Bill 184, which would ensure that sexual orientation and gender identity cannot be used as a legal basis for discriminating against Alaskans. House Bill 184 would help ensure that Alaskans have a level playing field as they look for jobs, housing, credit, and use public accommodations. I suspect that if you ask the average Alaskan, he or she would assume that these civil rights safeguards already are law. Most people see protecting civil rights as a no-brainer, since those rights are widely recognized both in society and in federal law. House Bill 184 represents an opportunity to protect civil rights through state law, which is important both as a matter of principle, but also as a practical matter for Alaskans who should not be subjected to discrimination in their daily lives. Thank you to the many members of the legislature who have co-sponsored this bill, Representative Joseph. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGee, for your testimony. And if that's written testimony, please submit to my office and we can make sure that it's added to the committee record. Next in Anchorage, Bessie Odom. Please put yourself on record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
For the record, my name is Bessie Odom, and I live in House District 28, and I'm here representing myself. Many people come to Alaska just to visit. After a while, some of these people have decided to call Alaska home. My parents are one of the thousands of examples. My parents moved to Alaska from the heart of Mississippi in 1972. At the time, they had no idea that they would be permanent residents of Alaska. They were attracted to the freedoms that Mississippi did not allow. My parents were content knowing that the discrimination that dominated their lives in the South was not as apparent in the last frontier. It was here in Alaska that my parents were able to truly live unafraid. I have heard the discriminatory experiences of my parents, and needless to say, no one deserves to be treated as anything less than human. When I say no one, I mean just that. You should not be discriminated against because of your race, gender, or sexual orientation. Alaska has always provided its citizens a safe haven from discrimination. We must fight to ensure that Alaska remains this way. It is time that we not only stand up to support our brothers and sisters of various genders and sexual orientations, but it is time that we protect them with inclusive language of HB 184. Vote yes on House Bill 184. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Odom. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, we will move from Anchorage to Fairbanks. Thank you, everyone in Fairbanks, for waiting and taking the time to testify today. Going in order, as it appears in the queue, Grace Matthews, please present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Hello, my name is Grace Matthews, and I am from Fairbanks, Alaska, where I currently live. Growing up queer in Alaska has not been easy. When I moved out of my parents' house at 18 and rented a dry cabin in the woods, I wondered if my landlord might want to evict me if she knew about my girlfriend. After I got my automotive mechanics certificate, I got my first job in an auto shop. My coworkers were not shy when talking about their intolerance. I never told my boss or my coworkers about my girlfriend because I was well aware that I could lose my job. I am here today to testify in support of House Bill 184 so that Alaskans younger than me don't have to grow up wondering if they belong in this state. I love my state and I love Alaskans. We are independent, hardworking, and kind. Discrimination is not an Alaskan value. Please vote on this bill and pass it through the committee.
Thank you very much, Ms. Matthews, for your testimony, taking the time to testify. Moving next online in the Fairbanks LIO, Kara Carlson. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Hello. My name is Kara Carlson, and I identify as an ally. I want to talk to you for a second about what that means to me. It goes beyond believing that all people deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. It means taking a stand when basic human rights are not treated equally, and not just when it's convenient, but all the time. A few years ago, I was invited to walk in the safe parade with CFLAG, which is an organization that focuses on advancing equality for people.
And Ms. Carlson, I'm sorry to interrupt. The connection is going in and out, and if there's anything on your end to perhaps adjust the headset or speak closer to the microphone, give it a shot so we can make out all the words of your testimony.
Okay.
Much better.
Can you hear me better now?
Much better.
Okay, thanks. So I was saying, a few years ago, I was invited to walk in the Golden Days Parade with PFLAG, which is an organization that focuses on advancing equality for people who identify as LGBTQ. This is my first time walking with PFLAG or any LGBTQ organization. When I showed up, I was met by 15 energetic, passionate strangers who were standing in between two groups of people who were not excited about our presence there. Honestly, I was terrified. I walked back to my car and I called my dad in tears because I did not feel strong enough to be an ally on that day. My dad reminded me that I had the choice to go home, a privilege not everyone has. That same year, I experienced discrimination for the first time. And I really want to emphasize that this in no way compares to the experiences of my friends, colleagues, and neighbors who have lifetimes of experience with discrimination. It is just an example of what not having these protections does to everyone. I, as a young single mother, had been fortunate enough to find affordable housing that felt safe for my family. I was a model tenant, and that is why I was surprised and saddened when my landlord made reference to seeing me at that parade and the many threats of eviction and reprimands that followed. I wish I could articulate for you how scary it was for me as a single mother to feel at risk of losing my housing. But more importantly, my friends, families, neighbors do actually lose their housing. My friends, my families, neighbors do actually lose their housing, their jobs, their livelihood, and their basic human rights because we as a society have decided that there are groups of people who do not deserve the same rights we enjoy and take for granted every day. Please support HB 184. Updating this law will ensure that people in our state are judged on their job performance and qualifications. No one should have to live in fear of being legally fired for reasons that have nothing to do with job performance or being denied housing or other services. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Carlson, for your testimony. And as a reminder for anyone in Fairbanks who's just testified or anyone in Anchorage previously, if you have any written testimony, please email it to me or my office, and we'll make sure it gets added to the record. Next in Fairbanks, Marina Day. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Hello, I'm Marina Day, a voter from Esper, Alaska. Well, yes, I am. I am LGBTQ. The other day, when I was in church, we handed out...
Ms. Day, same issue as the previous testifier. You're going in or out. If there's anything you can do on your end to speak closer to the microphone, it will help us hear you better on this end.
Okay. How's this sound?
Better, I think. Give it a shot.
Okay. Anyway, the other day in church, we handed out pieces of paper with our worst fears on it to each other. And the one I received was, my son came out last Christmas. We all 100% support him. But I will always worry about him as his mom, especially as people cannot be so accepting. No mother should have to worry about that in Alaska. Please traverse HB 184 out of committee and into law. Do this in honor of the love in your heart. Do this in honor of George M. Lincoln, whose Senate Bill 169 would have brought protection for my tribe in the state 15 years prior. Apparently, issues of crime against humanity are not going away without the shield of law. SB 169 may have prevented years of despondency in our communities. Pass this HB 184 into law. In honor of all that testified against the crimes of hate and discrimination every time this legislation is bequeathed. The human rights law in the state are meant to be secure the peace, order, health, and safety and general welfare of the state and its inhabitants. Turn HB 184 into law. End the bullying of the non-binary and allow for the vast expression of gender that exists in the human realm. Do this in honor of the love in your heart, because love trumps hate. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next in line in Fairbanks, at the Fairbanks LIO, Shannon Price, please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Shannon Price, and I live in House District 4. I have been a voting citizen in that district for over 30 years, during which time I've also raised a family who would be impacted by these discriminations. I've come today to offer my views on House Bill 184, which would update Alaska's non-discrimination statutes. The right to self-expression should only be limited when it poses a clear danger to the safety of others. Within that limitation, any person should enjoy the same rights of others. Historically, Alaska led the nation in establishing protections against discrimination. A great state has added protections covering individuals against discrimination based on disability and age. This is because there was and continues to be a sense that our state is great because it is plural, that this is not just a great state for, as an example, white males. Regrettably, in 2015, the Alaska Supreme Court found a very narrow definition of the protections based on sex. I personally know of Alaskans who have been impacted both in their attempts to find employment and in their attempts to obtain housing by discrimination against orientation or against identity and expression. This is wrong. Orientation and identity have no relation to how well one does their job and what goes on behind closed doors, our private lives. It's no one's business as long as it stays within the limitations noted above. Discrimination is based on beliefs. You are entitled to your belief as long as it does not cause harm to others. It was a founding principle of this nation that one group of citizens never had the right to impose their religious beliefs on another group, as this infringes on the right of the second group to practice their beliefs as they see fit, to choose their beliefs. Orientation and identity are even more fundamental than beliefs, as one does not have the choice of one's orientation and identity, in that they are just like one's color or national origin. Thus, it is just as wrong to discriminate against an individual based on their orientation and identity. For these reasons, I wholeheartedly support this bill, and I encourage the committee to move the bill to the full House for its consideration approval. I'd like to thank the committee for their time in considering my point of view.
Thank you very much. And moving next in line in Fairbanks, Rose O'Hara Jolly. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Rose O'Hara Jolly, and I live in House District 4. I am here in support of HB 184. Alaska is my home, and I have dedicated myself to helping to make it a better place. I worked as an educator of young children with special needs for over 13 years. I currently work teaching teachers at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And although I do not worry about my job at UAF, I have had to hide who I am from employers in the past out of fear. Fear of being fired, fear of being targeted in my small community, and fear of losing a place to live. I am not alone. 44% of LGBTQ people report discrimination at work. It is unacceptable that I could be denied employment, housing, or other services in the place that I call home, because of my gender identity and who I love. The cities of Anchorage, Juneau, and Sitka have all passed legislation protecting the LGBTQ community from discrimination. That means over 340,000 Alaskans, almost half the state, are already protected. I find it upsetting that I must come out myself to this committee in hopes of receiving the same protections as other Alaskans. The city where I live does not offer protections based on sexual orientation and gender identity, and as a result, in my coming here, it could directly affect my ability to gain employment or housing. It is time that we stop with this patchwork approach to protection and let all Alaskans know that they are valued. Please support HB 184. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. O'Hara Jolly, for your testimony and for taking the time to testify. As a reminder for everybody in Fairbanks, if you have a written testimony, please, in addition to your verbal testimony, submit it to my office. The email address would be rep.jonathan.kreis-tompkins, and that's a mouthful, so you can Google it. But that makes it a lot easier for our recording secretary and would be much appreciated. Next in the line, in Fairbanks, the Fairbanks LEO to testify in HB 184, Liz Furman. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Liz Furman. I'm a resident of Fairbanks and an ally of GLBTQ folks. I'm a substitute teacher. I've worked in homeless shelters and as a wilderness therapy guide and also with youth with mental health disorders. We need to update Alaska's non-discrimination clause to include LGBTQ folks and promote dignity and human rights in our community. As a teacher, and after working with youth for many years and with homeless people,
I worry about our LGBTQ teens, especially our trans teens, who experience violence and hate speech almost daily. Working with at-risk folks and homeless people, I've noticed that our LGBTQ community is overrepresented. And it's not because they're doing something wrong. It's because they're experiencing discrimination in housing and in their employment. Sexual orientation has no relationship to job performance and has no relationship to one's ability to pay rent or be a respectful homeowner. It is shameful and wrong that in Alaska we are allowed to discriminate in these areas based on sexual orientation and identity. This kind of systemic discrimination harms society as a whole and strips LGBTQ individuals of their dignity and basic rights. In my experience, LGBTQ folks bring positivity, strength, skill, and perspective, and they have the right to practice their beliefs as they see fit. We need these kind of diverse leaders and role models in our communities, and we should be protecting their rights, not discriminating. So please support House Bill 184. Let's join the rest of the state with Anchorage, Juneau, and Sitka and pass this non-discrimination clause. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Furman, for your testimony. Moving next in line in the Fairbanks LIO, Liz Lake, and apologies for any mispronunciation. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
My name's Liz Lake. You did say it correctly. I'm a transgender woman from Fairbanks, Alaska. Alaska's been my home for 8 years, and it's really just since coming out 3 years ago that it really became my home in a way that Alaska is a place where we accept everyone and we include everyone. I've done my part to make Alaska better, and for us to have the best Alaska possible, we need to let everyone LGBTQ+ live the best life they can. That means have the best job they can, the best place to live, the best loan. They need everything that we all have experienced. Alaska has given me so much, and I do my part to give back. Right now, 24 states in the United States have LGBTQ protections. Alaska can stand on the side of history and get it right before we're left with the bottom half. We can step in and be number 25, or if we wait too long, maybe we'll be 26, but we need to step in now and be on the right side of history. I just hope that you guys will get this out of committee and get it out to the Senate and get this through and passed. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lake, for your testimony. Next in line, Liz Tapp in Fairbanks. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Yes, my name is Elizabeth Tapp, and I live in Fairbanks, Alaska. I moved here in 2008 from a place that I jokingly referred to as Sodom and Gomorrah, but most people know as Los Angeles. And when I first moved here, what blew me away most about Alaska was how kind and helpful everyone was. I didn't know anything about snow or cold or where to get appropriate anything, and everyone stepped up and helped me. And I wonder now, if they had known that I was gay, would that store clerk have been as helpful? Would the DMV have been as helpful? Would I have been able to find housing as easily? I'm not sure of that now. I have the luxury of looking like your average middle-class white woman. And that's a luxury that maybe not everybody has. And I just think I shouldn't have to rely on that luxury. And I shouldn't have to hide that I have a beautiful transgender wife. And I shouldn't have to worry about where she goes or how she'll be treated. I shouldn't have to worry if doctors will turn her away. I shouldn't have to worry if police will treat her differently. I shouldn't have to worry about any of these things because her rights should be protected just as anyone else's are. And I just wish everyone in Alaska could have that same experience I had when I first moved here. The experience of kind, helpful Alaskans reaching out and saying, hey, you need a ride to the store. Hey, you know, those boots aren't very good. You should really go with this other brand. I wish everyone had that experience
but they don't. And this bill will help further that experience.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And last in the Fairbanks LAO, Abby North, please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Okay, I'm Abby North. I've lived in Fairbanks since 2001, and I'm Liz Tapp's wife. So I'm a transgender woman. I'm also a teacher. Since I came out about a year ago, I've been discriminated against twice. I've been refused service at a pharmacy, and I guess in the most Alaskan of ways, I was gun shopping and refused service at a gun shop. But I'm not here for me. I have a job that includes, I'm lucky enough to have a job that includes protections for sexual orientation and gender identity, and my wife and I own our home. I'm here for my really good friends, all the LGBT people of Alaska, but especially here for my LGBT students. They get tortured on, as other testimony has stated, on a daily basis. I try to fight that as well as I can. I try to get my colleagues to fight it. But what happens when they leave school and go out into the real world and can't find a job or can't find a home for no other reason than for who they are or who they love? So please pass HB 184 out and protect all Alaskans equally. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony and for everybody in Fairbanks taking the time to testify. This takes us to offline testimony, and we'll start with James Hoagland in Juneau. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony. Mr. Hoagland, can you hear us? Moving next in line, Morgan Wilhelm in Ketchikan. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Hi, my name is Morgan Wilhelm, and I'm a lifelong member of Ketchikan, Alaska, which is Subdistrict 36. I've been out as a member of the LGBTQ community since I was 13 years old, and I'm calling in support of HB 184 with all of my heart, morality, and common sense.
And Ms. Wilhelm, to interject quickly, if you're speaking on speakerphone, if you can come off speakerphone or speak closer to the microphone, that will help us hear you better. Please continue.
Sorry about that. My family has lived in Alaska for 4 generations, and I have every intention to spend my life here as well. I've traveled around the world, but wherever I go, I find myself bragging to the people I meet about the vibrant cultures and landscapes I grew up in. I don't mention the fear I have of living my life in a place where my job could be taken from me because I'm gay. I don't talk about the lump I got in my throat when one of my mentors told me she couldn't announce her marriage at work. It breaks my heart that she risked being fired to be with someone she loves. Being gay is part of my identity and something I can't change about myself. Alaska is a place where I want to thrive and spend my life here as an openly gay citizen. Passing House Bill 184 will protect my ability to obtain and maintain employment and live with dignity and honesty. I hope you will support the passage of this bill. Thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you very much for your testimony today, Ms. Wilhelm. Moving next online, Pamela Samish from Nenana. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Pamela Samish, and I'm in Nenana, Alaska. And thank you for taking my testimony. I might have to cut this short because I might and just email you. But I am actually online, too, for another testimony after this. I guess I'm a little concerned about this. I've heard a lot of heartfelt testimonies from very nice people, but in the community I live in, I haven't even seen this to be a problem. I mean, here, it doesn't matter religion. Not religion, but sexual orientation doesn't seem to affect anybody in our community, and I've never seen that before in Alaska. So honestly, these testimonies sort of surprised me, because I wasn't expecting to even hear this today. I was waiting for the next one. But I am kind of shocked to hear that this even has been an issue. My only reason I wanted to testify was because of the children. A couple of people had made mention of the children in the schools being discriminated against. I struggle with that. I think there's been a little bit of a misunderstanding there, being that I'm involved heavily in the schools myself, or the school. What some people might consider discrimination, and I could be wrong, might be just concern, because there seems to be pressure from the schools to become an LGBT, and there seems to be a very strong liberal movement, and those of us who are conservative Christians feel like everybody is wonderfully and fearfully made by God in the womb of their mother, and perhaps they were never, they're being coerced into this, and pressured into this, and they don't even get a chance. And we actually have seen this happen to children, where they experimented with it because other people were doing it, and it was taught to them that this is good and natural and okay. And then they became confused and depressed and even suicidal because they didn't know who they were or what they, and it was just a big mess. And so I don't think that all the time people are discriminating. I think they're just concerned that, and the American Academy of Pediatrics actually agrees that we need to be careful about pressuring children into this movement. So that would be my biggest concern, is that in listening to the testimony, is the children. And
Ms. Samish, I'm going to jump in and ask if you could send the rest of your testimony in writing, given that we're in excess of the two-minute window. But thank you for your testimony and taking the time today.
Okay.
This takes us next off net to Xenia Peterson in Anchorage. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Xenia Peterson. I live in House District 17, and I'm representing my...
And if you're on a speakerphone, could you come off speaker and present your testimony to help us hear you better?
You know, I'm not, but I do hear myself. I think I'll just submit my testimony via email, but thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, I think I heard you say you'll submit it in writing, and we look forward to receiving it. Thank you for taking the time today. And at this moment, given that this meeting has noticed through 5:15, I think we are going to hold on hearing HJR1 today, given time constraints. But I do want to see out public testimony in HB 184. I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more people in the queue. We'll work through those 7, close public testimony, and hold the legislation, even if we're going a little bit over our allotted time. Next online, Allison Quintine in Fairbanks. Please put yourself on the record, Alyssa, and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Please proceed.
Okay, sorry about that. Alyssa Clinton from Fairbanks and District 1. Thank you for letting me testify today. I just wanted to take a minute and acknowledge all of my fellow community members who testified in support of this bill. Them as well as I, we have all worked so hard in our community of Fairbanks to make it safe for LGBTQ people. And it's really frustrating when we know that there is legislation that can protect the people we care about and the people we work with, and it's not going through, and it doesn't give us, it doesn't give me as an activist, as an ally, as someone who cares, a leverage to help those who are being discriminated against. And having this legislation passed, not only this committee, but judiciary, to make it a state law,
is going to give this community a leg in making sure that our communities are safe, that people do not have to live in fear of losing their jobs, of getting fired, that parents of LGBTQ children now have legal avenues if their child is discriminated against. And I can assure other people on the phone, it does happen, and it happens to people that I know personally. It's even happened to me, and it's something that should not happen. No kid needs to go through that. No kid needs to know that their community is not going to accept them. So I urge all of you on this community for your support, for you to vote yes on this bill, and if you have a chance to speak in favor of this bill, to get your constituents involved, because the more voices we have amplified is going to not only make sure this legislation is passed, but that the LGBT community in Alaska and everywhere is supported and welcomed. Thank you.
Thank you, Alyssa, and thank you for taking the time to testify today. That takes us next to Jeff Chen in Anchorage. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Jeff Chen. I live in House District 18, and I am speaking on behalf of myself. I'm testifying in support of House Bill 184 because I believe the state of Alaska should have non-discrimination laws for everyone, including our lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer community members. Americans. I work in the youth conservation community, and I am on the board of directors of the Alaska Chinese Association, though I am only representing myself in my testimony. Our history is full of acts of legal discrimination based on local, state, and federal policies, and immigrant families know discrimination. We know legal discrimination. For example, the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882 barred Chinese immigrants from entering the country and gaining access to housing, work, and places of public accommodation. The ramifications were felt throughout society and led to physical violence and literally the massacre of Chinese communities. There is no justice in excluding based on race, religion, color, national origin, age, sex, disability, and marital status, just as there is no justice in discriminating based on sexual orientation and gender identity. 44% of LGBTQ respondents reported facing discrimination at work. In Alaska, that discrimination is legal, and that discrimination is leading to an increase in anti-LGBTQ violence across the country. I support HB 184 because our LGBTQ family and friends should not have to face discrimination in the workplace, in public, or at home. Remember, through the perseverance of Elizabeth Peretovich and other Alaska Native and Alaskan advocates, our state passed some of the nation's first anti-discrimination laws. I urge you to support HB 184. And to the woman in the Nana, just because you don't experience something yourself, it doesn't mean it's not real. Vote no on Prop 1, and please support House Bill 184. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chen, for taking the time to testify. Next online, Melissa Berger in Anchorage. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Okay. Hello. My name is Melissa Berger, and I am a resident at Anchorage. I do vote.
And Melissa, apologies for interjecting. We're struggling to hear you. If there's anything you can do differently on your end to speak closer to the microphone, that would help us hear your testimony.
Okay, give me 1 second. Is that better?
I think so. Please give it a shot.
Okay. My name is Melissa Berger, and I'm a resident at Anchorage. I am a proud LGBTQ advocate, and through my advocacy years during high school, I have met so many amazing and wonderful and talented people who embrace my heart to say that they discrimination on stuff that they are. And I'm also proud to say that I go to East High School, which is the most diverse school in the nation. And for me, what that means is that when I step inside my school, I see not only people of religion and race and color and everything, I see people who are LGBTQ. And I feel like that this, and for those of you people who are saying that, oh, well, you guys have rights to gay marriage, so what else do you need? We need this law to pass to help with our discrimination laws. We are being discriminated. And for those of you who aren't aware, there is Proposition 1 that we need to going to take away trans rights. So now, so thanks to Proposition 1 and those from other minded people and society in our community, we need to pass. We need this House Bill 184 to be 184 to pass now more than ever. Please. Thank you for letting me testify in support of.
Thank you, Ms. Berger, for your testimony and taking the time this evening. This takes us to our last four testifiers off net. Melissa Goldstein in Anchorage with ACLU, please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes. Melissa Goldstein, can you hear us?
Hello?
We can hear you. Great.
Okay,
please proceed.
Great. Good afternoon. My name is Melissa Goldstein, and I'm a legal fellow at the ACLU of Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on HB 184, which we strongly support. Today, I'd like to provide you with statistics about the discrimination transgender Alaskans face on a daily basis. 2015, the National Center for Transgender Equality conducted a survey of over 27,000 transgender Americans, including 84 Alaskans. In Alaska, 85% of transgender children have faced discrimination and harassment. Over half of transgender children were verbally harassed. Nearly a third were physically harassed because they were transgender, and 14% were sexually assaulted. Were physically attacked because they were transgender. Nearly a quarter of transgender children in Alaska faced such severe mistreatment as a transgendered person that they left the K-12 school. Transgender adults are similarly impacted. In 2015 alone, one-third of transgender Alaskans experienced some form of housing discrimination, and 23% experienced homelessness. 17% were denied employment opportunities or were fired because of their gender identity or expression. Anchorage has protected its citizens from discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity or expression since 2015 without issue. But even Anchorage's protections are under attack. These attacks make state anti-discrimination bills like HB 184 even more necessary. You can find the statistics I referenced along with other data about discrimination transgender Alaskans face in the study we attached to our testimony, to our written testimony. Thank you again for the opportunity to provide testimony, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Goldstein, for your testimony. I should note that we are in receipt of your written testimony, and it will be added to the committee record. Are there any questions? Seeing none, moving to the last three testifiers, I have in off-net Judy Andree with League of Women Voters of Alaska in Juneau. Judy, if you can hear us, please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Yes, I'm Judy Andree, a resident of Juneau. I'm speaking for the League of Women Voters today. The League of Women Voters of both the United States and the state of Alaska believes that one of government's most important responsibilities is to protect the rights and safety of all citizens, and HB 184 helps provide such protection. A society is weakened when it excludes some of its citizens from full participation in the rights and opportunities available to most of its citizens. Therefore, the League of Women Voters of Alaska strongly supports HB 184, a bill to protect the rights of persons regardless of sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression. And we urge members of the House State Affairs Committee to consider the rights of all your constituents and pass HB 184 out of committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Andree, for your testimony and taking the time this evening. This takes us to Casey Kasort, and apologies for any mispronunciation. Please put yourself on the record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Hello, my name is Casey Kasort, and I'm from Fairbanks. I'm testifying in support of HB 184. In high school, I was the vice president of my school's Gender Sexuality Alliance, and I wrote about a letter of support for a different version of this bill when I was just 14. And it was the first bill I ever printed out and went through with a highlighter because it mattered so much to me. Now I'm 19, and I know that it just makes sense to have fundamental protections under the law. Young people like me have grown up watching America learn to accept us for who we love and the way we live. But in Alaska, we can still be fired, kicked out of our home, denied loans, and prevented from achieving our full potential based on our identities. I'm an ally, and I know that it's time to move this bill out of committee and onto the floor, where our representatives can show us that they're ready to stand up for all of their constituents. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and I urge you to support HB 184. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Kasort. And that takes us to our last offline testifier, Isidore Christensen. Please put on record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Hello, my name is Isidore Christensen. I am currently a student and member of the Campus Inclusivity Alliance at UAS, but I am only representing my testimony. I support HB 184 because at this point in our history, it should be a given that everybody within the LGBTQ spectrum should be able to live freely without any threat of being discriminated against. It should be a given that parents should take as much time off work as they need to raise their kids. It should be a given that people with mental or physical disabilities should receive accommodations. It should be a given that people can take time off of work to practice their religions. While Alaska has made a lot of progress in terms of inclusion, the fact that this bill needs to be passed in 2018, plus the fact that our neighbors in Anchorage are currently struggling with an anti-trans ballot measure, shows that we still have a ways to go. There are still queer young adults in Alaska who are struggling with getting support in certain places from certain people. If my gay friends can't get the support they need from their parents, they should at least have more amiable work environments. The passage of this bill will be important for not only our own political climate, but of America's political climate. As legislators, your priorities should be to create opportunities and not to restrict them. To nurture dreams, not deny them. Your priorities should not be deny rights, should apply equally to all, without caveats or exceptions. You cannot say you support family values and cast your support against supporting families. You cannot say that all men are treated equal without supporting legislation that reaffirms our unity. In conclusion, I endorse the passage of this bill as reflective of the rights granted every citizen under the Constitution of the United States and of Alaska, and I hope our legislators will support it as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Christensen, for your testimony. And seeing no further testimony online in the LIOs or in the room, at this time I'm going to close public testimony and thank the 31 testifiers this afternoon, this evening, who took the time. There will be an amendment deadline that is circulated to the committee when we have this bill next scheduled. My office will be in touch when we have a date and time. And with HJR 1 tabled, given that we're out of time, that concludes the business for today. I do want to note on Thursday we have HCR 22 from Representative Millett for a second hearing and possible committee action. HJR 38 from Representative Kopp, also a second hearing for possible action depending on public testimony or interest of the committee for further amendments. And then a bill that will be read across tomorrow relating to the collection of fees by the Department of Public Safety for fire and explosion prevention and safety services. Real exciting. That's a one-pager. Thank you, Eileen and Martha, for facilitating the meeting today. And at 5:25 p.m., we are adjourned.